Today, we begin our study of lesson number 11, Mishnayos Maseches Gittin. Today, we will learn the eighth Mishnah of the third Perek, finishing the third Perek, and beginning the fourth Perek with the first Mishnah. So it's Perek Gimel Mishnah Ches and Perek Dalet Mishnah Aleph. Mishnah Ches continues to develop the principle which we've learned yesterday of a chazoka, that if a person was at the moment that I left him or the moment that we departed, he was alive, we assume that he's alive today unless we have some reason to believe otherwise. So there's a chazoka shehem kayomim. It's not only true by people, as we will see, and whether they're living or dead, but it applies to other things as well. We assume that things remain in their status quo unless we have reason to believe that the status has changed. So the Mishnah says, Hamaniach peros lihios mafrish aleihem terumo umasros. Person has a farm in Eretz Yisrael, so he has to give from that farm, from the crops, truma to the Kohen. He also has to give the various maasros, maaser rishon to the Levi, maaser sheni for himself to take to Yerushalayim or to exchange for money, maaser oni to the poor person. So if I have put away a stockpile of peros, I put it in the corner of my barn, and I want to use, to be able to extract from that heap of whatever, grain, wheat, barley, grapes, whatever, I want to be able to use that as the source from which to extract what I'm going to give as truma or masros. So I have a large farm, and instead of every time I'm harvesting a bit here, a bit there, being mafresh truma umaisro, setting aside truma and maaser, instead of that, I have one central location, and that's the stockpile or the resource pile from which I draw trumos umaisros. So hamaniach peros, I put aside peros, lios mafresh aleihem, from that stockpile of peros, I'm going to be mafresh, I'm going to separate truma umasros. Or a similar situation. Ma'os lihios mafresh aleihem ma'aser sheni. The second tithe, the ma'aser sheni, is a tithe, a tenth, that I take, and if I can, I take it to Yerushalayim, and I eat it there as part of a beautiful simcha. However, to schlep truckloads of Maaser Sheni from my farm in Tzvas to Yerushalayim is a big bother. So therefore what I can do is take these truckloads of harvest, of crops, exchange them for money, for coins, and take the coins to Yerushalayim, and with those coins buy food for this big feast, this big party that I'm going to have to consume the Maaser Sheni. So suppose I have a little drawer, and in that drawer I have a whole stack of coins, bunch of coins, and these coins are set aside so that when I have a truckload of grapes, instead of dragging it to Yerushalayim, I simply say, this truckload is now being exchanged for those coins which I have in the drawer of my desk, And the truckload of grapes is now chulin, is no longer maaser sheni, and the coins now take on the status of maaser sheni. Now, the question, of course, is, if I put this stockpile of grapes away, or this stash of money away, last week, 2 weeks ago, how do I know that those peros are still there? Maybe the grapes rotted. Maybe someone took them away and ate them. Maybe the money was stolen. Maybe it was lost. Maybe someone mistakenly took them and spent it. How? So the Mishnah tells us, no, there's a chazakah. You left them intact. They're still intact, unless you have reason to believe otherwise. Mafrish aleihem, so I can go and continue to be mafrish trumos of maestros, becheska shehen kayam. In other words, if I have now a bushel of grapes and I want to eat them, so I can say, fine, some of the grapes back in the stockpile, back in my barn, will now become truma and maaser for this stack of grapes. Or, if it's maaser sheni that I have out in the field, I can say that the maaser sheni is now being exchanged for the money that I have back in the drawer, and that money I can assume to be intact. Becheskas shehen kayomen. Im ovdu, however, suppose I find that these peros are gone. I was relying upon these peros for trumos and maestros. I was relying upon this money for maaser sheni, and I go back to the barn to see that stockpile of peros, or go back to my desk to see the drawer of money, and I find, ovdu, im ovdu, they're gone, it's gone. Hareze choshesh me eis lo eis. So I have to be concerned that they're not only gone now, but they've been gone for the past 24 hours. And everything that I set aside and used, everything that I set aside, assuming that I could use these peros or this maos for the trumas or maestros or for the exchange for the maaser sheni, anything I put aside in the past 24 hours, I have to assume is not metukan. I have to assume that the trumas or maestros were not given, the money didn't exist anymore. Because 2 weeks ago, the money was there, the peros were there. Now, they're gone. So I have to kind of think, well, they didn't just disappear this minute. I have to assume that they've been gone for the past 24 hours. And anything that I did relying upon that stockpile of peros or that stash of money, I now must redo, so to speak. I must be mafrish again, or I must take coins and exchange it again in the case of maaser sheni. Divrei Rabbi Elozo ben Shamua. This is the opinion of Rabbi Elozo ben Shamua, who feels that we only have to be concerned retroactively back in time for the past 24 hours. And anything that I used relying upon these peros or upon this money more than 24 hours ago, I can assume is mitukan. Because more than 24 hours ago, I can assume they were not yet lost. The Gemara explains that this is one man's opinion, and that the Chachomim disagree with Rabbi Elozo ben Shamua, and they feel that anything that you were mafrish for them, anything that you relied upon them, must now be redone, and must be again, there must be a second hafrosh astruma, a second hafrosh asmaestros, because you have to go back in time until the time that you know it was intact. From 10 minutes after it was intact, maybe right then and there, the peros were stolen or got lost or the money was taken or whatever. But in our Mishnah, we don't have that opinion mentioned, only the opinion of Rabbi Elozer ben Shamua that we must go back retroactively only 24 hours. The Mishnah concludes, and the Perek concludes, with an independent halacha, not directly related to what we've been studying. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda teaches us, Bishlosha prokim, at three times of the year, botkin es hayayin. If a person put aside barrels of wine and said, that wine is going to be from which I will take trumos umaestros, so that I can drink all my barrels of wine without concern, because those barrels, those three barrels in the basement, in the cellar, those are the ones that I'm going to use, la hafrish aleihem, trumos umaestros. Fine. However, I have to be sure that the wine is still wine and it didn't go sour. Because it became sour, it became vinegar. You cannot be mafrish meiser from vinegar to wine. You have to be mafrish from wine to wine. So periodically, excuse me, I have to check these barrels of wine to make sure that they did not become hichmitz, they did not become sour, they did not become vinegar. The three seasons of the year in which you examine the barrels to make sure that they're still wine are b'kodim shel motzoi hachag, immediately after Sukkos. Chag means the Chag of Sukkos. When the eastern wind is blowing, so at that time of year, it's a time when it's quite possible that wine is going to go sour. So you have to inspect it at that time. Uba hutsoas simodar. Simodar is the period in the development of the vine. When the vine begins to develop, first you see flowers that sprout. You don't yet see what will eventually become grapes. There's a point where these blossoms or flowers fall off, and then you can begin to see the developing grapes. That's the point which is called Hotsoas Simodar. At that point in the agricultural year, it was appropriate, it was important to check the chovios, to check these barrels of wine, to make sure that they indeed were wine and not had not gone sour. And also, uvishas kenisas mayim baboser. Boser are unripened grapes, but the unripened grapes begin to swell as they accumulate moisture within them. At that point in time, when this moisture begins to become absorbed in the unripened raw grapes known as boser, at that point, it's likely or possible that the wine went sour, and therefore the wine needs to be examined at that point to make sure that it was wine. The next Mishnah begins Perek Revi. And the Mishnah introduces here a concept of bitul haget. That is, if the husband sends a get, a divorce document, to his wife, and he's at some distance from his wife, and along the way, the husband, before the get reaches the hands of the woman, the husband says, no, I cancel the get. I declare it null and void. That's bitul. And the husband has the right to do that even after he has given the get to a messenger, to a shliach, to deliver to the wife. Once, however, the get reaches her hands, she's migureshes, she's divorced, and he no longer has the possibility of bitul. So the Mishnah says, Hasholeach get liishto vihigia basholeach. The person sends through a messenger a get to his wife. Vihigia means, and he happened upon the shliach. Shliach sets out on a train to go to the wife, and it happens that the husband is taking the same train. Lo and behold, he sees the shliach there. O shesholach acharov shliach. Or, the husband sends a second shliach after the first. V'yomar lo, and the husband says to the shliach that he sent, get shenosati loch botelhu, the get which I gave you, I hereby declare botel, hare ze botel. The get is now null and void. Gemara explains that we do not say that since he just happened to meet the shliach and said it was botel, he didn't really mean to nullify the get. He was only trying to be nasty and sadistically nasty and to upset his wife. Because if he had indeed intended to nullify it, he wouldn't have just happened upon the shliach, he would have pursued the shliach. We don't say that. Similarly, we don't say that the second shliach does not have the power to be mevatel, to nullify the agency implicit in the first shliach. We don't say that. But rather we say that the bittul is a bittul and the get is null and void. But, the Mishnah continues, different case. Kodam eitzel ishto. Suppose the husband reaches the wife before the shliach got there. He sent the shliach on Tuesday morning. The shliach carried along the way. Didn't get there until Thursday morning. Wednesday morning, the husband reached his wife. Oshe sholach etzlo shliach. Or, he sent a shliach to her. He sent a second shliach to where the wife is. V'omar lo, and either he or the second shliach said, get shesholachti lich botelhu, the get which I sent you is botel. Again, hareze botel, the get is nullified. Even in such a situation, we do not say that he's just being nasty and teasing his wife, etc. We don't say that. If he declares the get botel, it's botel. However, big exception. Im mishihigia haget liyodo, once the get reaches her hand, and he's standing and screaming, no, the get is botel, the get is botel, it's too late. Or, by the way, if she designates a shliach, not a shliach to deliver the get, a shliach lohoylocho, but rather a shliach to receive the get on her behalf, a shliach kabbalah, then if the get reaches that shliach, she is divorced, and the husband no longer has the right to declare it botel. Shuv, once the get reaches the hands of the woman, or the hands of the woman's designated shliach, shuv eino yochol levatlo, he can no longer nullify it. Even if we observe, the Gemara says, that this husband is pursuing, he's running, he's trying everything to get there before it reaches her hands, and we know his intention is to make it botel, once it reaches her hands, it's no longer possible for him to be mevatel it. We will be learning more about the concept of bittul as we continue in the next Mishnah. But for now, we have completed lesson number 11.